My name is Jackie Brolsma, and I am a master's level nurse by background, and I have worked in the field of chemical dependency treatment for about the last 12 years, going on 13, I guess, in a variety of settings, working with families as well as individuals in both hospital and outpatient-based type treatment programs. And the focus of the session today is really to talk a little bit about what has become somewhat of a new discovery in the past few years, and I'll talk a little bit about the history of that, but the possibility, I guess, of how the treatment field has really expanded in looking at children who were raised in an alcoholic home, growing up into adulthood, and recognizing that that experience has impacted them in a particular kind of way that is worthy of some attention. Okay, and that will kind of be my starting point. I want to give some credit where credit is due, and that's to some of the authors who have done a lot of work in this area and possibly books that we can recommend. At present, there's not really any available in the bookstore. One is on order that's not specifically about alcoholism, but it does talk about dysfunctional families. And it's written by, I believe, a Lutheran pastor called Family Ties That Bind. And I think that's a particularly good reference book for people to use who, in any kind of way, want to look at maybe how your family upbringing has influenced you in some particular way, looking at what we call family of origin issues. It's not particularly about alcoholism, but I think that's one good book that's available to you. Kind of the classic that was on the bestseller list for a number of months, maybe even up to a year, is one that's written by a woman by the name of Janet Woiditz, and the book is strictly called Adult Children of Alcoholics. And when this book came out, it really shook a lot of people out of the closet, and a number of people started coming forth and wanting treatment and saying, boy, can I relate to that? I never could understand what had happened to me, but this makes a lot of sense. So this is kind of the classic book that is kind of initially read by people who want to explore the topic. She's written a second book that has to do with the difficulty that adult children of alcoholics have in intimate relationships called Struggle for Intimacy. It's kind of a follow-up to that book, particularly looking at the issue of intimate relationships. And those are two books that I recommend. I have a resource list that I'd be willing to share with people. I have a limited number of those, but you're welcome to take a look at that. Another workbook that a number of people have used who wanted to maybe just deal with the issue on their own without particularly joining a treatment group or a treatment experience have used a workbook called Adult Children of Alcoholics, A Workbook for Healing. It's written by Patty McConnell. And even though it focuses on alcoholism, it also, I think, is a good workbook to use if you just want to look at some of your family of origin and some of the ways that your family upbringing has influenced you today. Okay. And I also want to just say, starting out, that I really invite input from people who have had experience, either personally or professionally, with this issue, and really invite you to share your own reaction to the information I share or contribute more in the time that we have. I really appreciate that. I want to say, first off, that I'm not a recovering alcoholic and that I did not grow up in an alcoholic home, but I did, in the course of working with people with alcoholic problems, recognize that my own family situation had its elements of dysfunction. I did have a father who suffered from chronic depression and was hospitalized periodically throughout my lifetime growing up. And I realized that a lot of the things that children of alcoholics experienced were real similar to mine. And I think that's kind of what has happened as a result of all this focus on adult children of alcoholics, is that children who grew up in other kinds of dysfunctional families have said, boy, I can relate to that even though my home was not alcoholic. And so that's why some of the things I may present to you or share with you may click for you even though you maybe didn't have an alcoholic family. The other thing I might say is that alcoholism is very generational. And very often we might have not had an alcoholic parent or an immediate family member who was alcoholic, but if we were to go back in our family tree, we might see that maybe grandparent, great-grandparents, uncles or aunts, and that also impacts the family in a particular kind of way as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be the immediate family. What this woman did was began to research, and we know historically what alcoholism, when it started to be treated, what we did was we kind of took the alcoholic and stuck them in a treatment program and thought that we should fix them and everything would be okay, and then we could put them back into the family and things should be hunky-dory and they should stay sober. And what began to happen was that we began to see that families began to become impacted by this disease in a particular kind of way that could be predicted, and in a way that also deserved attention, because what we found when we tried to treat just one particular person in this system was that we put the person back in there and it didn't work, because these other people had all functioned with this person drinking and behaving in a particular way. So when we tried to put them back into that system, they didn't fit, they didn't belong. And the forces were such to kind of put that person back in the particular way that he or she was. And we found that we really needed to treat everybody who would become involved or had some kind of a relationship with that person who was alcoholic. It was much like a mobile. If you've seen some of my other lectures, I usually bring a mobile in to talk about how families survive the experience of alcoholism, in the sense that, like a mobile, a family is also always trying to get balanced and to be stable. And a lot of the things that the family members do when alcoholism strikes a family is really to adjust and to stabilize and to kind of keep peace. And oftentimes we look at families and we can't understand why they're behaving the way that they are. And we think, God, that seems really crazy. But if you can really begin to think of it like a mobile and realize that what people are doing is just trying to stabilize and to keep things balanced in the family, it makes a lot more sense. And so what treatment began to do was realize that we needed to bring significant other people and families in for treatment. So we started with spouses, and we began to work with spouses. Well, that was all great. You know, we got the spouses trying to stop their controlling and their other kind of what we call codependent behaviors, and we tried to get them more focused on themselves instead of trying to enable and rescue and protect and cover up for the alcoholic, and that was well and good, and we began to see their recovery take place through Al-Anon, much like the alcoholics took place through AA. And that was good, but it still wasn't far enough, because then we began to see from literature and research that children were impacted in a particular way at a very young age by this disease, and began to survive it in a way that affected them later on in adulthood. And that's really what this woman was kind of making an effort to try and call attention to. Another person by the name of Claudia Black, who is out of Seattle, actually grew up not far from this area, has become a well-known educator and researcher on this topic. She's written a book called It Will Never Happen to Me, which is also highly recommended. Kind of the notion that I'm not going to become like my parents. And many times we think that children who grow up in alcoholic home would, you know, say, well, gee, it was such an awful experience, I'm not going to turn out like mom or dad. And that's not really the way that it happens. Statistics-wise, we can say that 1/3 of all children who have at least one alcoholic parent are going to become alcoholic. If children have two parents who are, the rates go up somewhere from 2/3 to almost 90%. And so children who have had two alcoholic parents, I generally recommend that they not drink alcohol or use mood-altering chemicals in any kind of way. The risk factors are just too great. Now that's really what happens to them alcoholically. But we know emotionally that the price they pay is even greater. We know that they are at very high risk to marry into alcoholism. Oftentimes the oldest child is the highest risk for that kind of situation happening, marrying an alcoholic. or marrying someone who requires a lot of caretaking or who is pretty dependent. They usually end up going into helping professions. So that's kind of just a background on why the whole movement of adult children of alcoholics has really become pretty pretty popular in one sense. They've also developed their own self-help group, which is somewhat connected to Al-Anon, but yet very different. This book's original publication was 83, and I believe Claudia Black's was something like 81. And so we're talking about a fairly recent topic, but it's also tremendously, blossomed since then. What this woman found was she made a list, essentially, of 13 characteristics that she found in a sample, which included half of which were recovering alcoholics, the other half were not, half were men, half were women. The youngest person was 23. Some were married and some were single. Some had children, some did not. Basically, all the people were also people who admitted themselves for some kind of help or counseling of some kind. And this, her initial study has been validated already numerous times and offers a lot of substantial evidence for the fact that children who are raised in an alcoholic home do show some particular characteristics that they have in common with other people who have also been raised in an alcoholic home. Now, the other thing I want to say is that many people have compared this experience somewhat to like a delayed stress syndrome. There was a lot of literature and research done on people who came back from Vietnam, and that experience was particularly traumatic. And it became known as what was called the delayed stress syndrome, or anybody who's experienced a pretty traumatizing event, people who survived the Holocaust, survivors of some particular natural disasters. Those kinds of situations have also been kind of made analogous to children who were raised in an alcoholic home, in the sense that they were subjected to trauma that was almost as severe as, say, Vietnam, or other kind of tragedy like that. And what we see in some ways is their experience being much like that, and the consequences being much like you see from Vietnam veterans or people who have had that kind of experience. What I'd like to do is share with you those characteristics and mention that they are not all inclusive. They're not all, particularly validated in the sense that they cannot be described and said that every person who is raised in an alcoholic home particularly experiences that. So, and feel free to, you know, comment on them or respond. The first one was that she mentions is a characteristic that she says alcoholics, adult children of alcoholics, guess at what normal behavior is. Children of alcoholics, or what we call ACOAs, I'll kind of abbreviate so I don't have to say that every time, because of the experience of being in an alcoholic family, there was a lot of chaos. The rules in the family were more unpredictability or inconsistency than they were consistent. And so oftentimes adult children who are raised in that kind of situation feel like they don't exactly know what normal behavior is, and they question a lot of time what their reality is. And so they sometimes describe it as, I grew up with everybody else getting the book on how life is supposed to be except me, and everybody got a copy of this book but I didn't, and I kind of don't feel exactly like I know the way normal is supposed to be. And that kind of ends up demonstrating itself not only in relationships but also in boundaries, in the sense of not knowing what normal boundaries are, perhaps not knowing what amount of work is normally to be expected of somebody, not knowing maybe what is overextension, or really what normal kind of behavior is. And so the first one she talks about is saying that adult children or ACOAs guess at what normal behavior is. And that's pretty understandable when you think about an alcoholic family being pretty chaotic, rigid, and people stuck kind of in particular roles and patterns of behaving. The second one she mentions is adult children of alcoholics have difficulty following a project through from beginning to end. They often saw a lot of false starts in their family. They might have heard maybe mom or dad say, "Forget it, I'm leaving you. I've had enough of this. I'm not going to take it anymore." And so maybe mom or dad leaves for a couple of days, and what do we know often happens? They end up coming back. Or they say, "Okay, this time I'll give them another chance." And so they end up seeing people start or say that they're going to do a lot of things, and maybe mom or dad or whoever the alcoholic is, you know, frequently says, "Well, I'll quit anytime. No problem. I can do it." And so there's a lot of broken promises that they experience, a lot of good intentions, like, "Honey, I promise I'm going to show up at your baseball game this time." And what do we know? Mom or dad gets intoxicated, doesn't show up. And so there's a lot of kind of false starts on things. Maybe mom or dad says, "Yeah, I'm going to go get help." And they maybe go once or twice and don't follow through. Or they say, "I'm going to go to Al-Anon for a while." They go and they don't get fixed in one day. So, you know, children learn kind of that pattern of not being able to kind of follow a project through to the end. And as far as they're concerned, that's the way most people live. I mean, that's been their experience. And again, it's related to that was kind of what was normal at that particular time. Adult children of alcoholics lie when it would be just as easy to tell the truth. Because one of the strong family rules in an alcoholic or a dysfunctional family is a lot of secrets and a lot of what we call triangular communication. Where one person in the family, say A, has an issue with this person over here, but they end up telling this person over here about it. And so this person is upset with this person, but they talk to this person, and this person ends up kind of being in the middle of it. There's not a lot of direct communication. People don't go to the people who they have the issues with. They confide in other people. And consequently, there's a lot of secrets and a lot of, or a lack of, feedback given to people directly. And so we call that triangular communication. So there's a lot of secrets in the family. They might see mom or dad surviving the alcoholism by also being dishonest. They might see mom, or maybe let's say the codependent person who's not alcoholic, making excuses for the alcoholic. Maybe the employer calls up and says, "You know, where is such and such today? They didn't show up for work." And then they see the spouse say, "Oh, well, they've got a bad headache," or "They had to go to the dentist today," or "The car broke down," making excuses, or they see the dishonesty demonstrated in how the rest of the family survives the disease. And so they end up seeing that it's easier to be dishonest than it is to tell the truth. And honesty and confrontation becomes a very difficult kind of thing for somebody who has been in that life experience to do. Conflict avoidance, peace at any price. They might see mom or dad or the codependent or the co-alcoholic or the spouse of the alcoholic going to great lengths to cover up for the person. And so they learn that it's easier to kind of lie or cover up than it is to be direct and to be honest. So the second one is that adult children, or a third one, have lie when it would be just as easy to tell the truth. A fourth one is that ACOAs judge themselves without mercy. Adult children of alcoholics are particularly hard on themselves. They can never quite do enough. They often are the people I say who apologize when they bump into a coffee table. They're always feeling like they're not quite good enough. I should be working harder. I perhaps could have done something extra for this person. And then doing all of that and still feeling terribly inadequate. Oftentimes we say codependents are people who've probably done a lot of good in the world, but when they die, they feel like they still could have done more. And they judge themselves just pretty harshly, pretty hard on themselves. And some of that comes from also being in an alcoholic family where there's a lack of feedback. And because usually in an alcoholic family there's a really low, a lack of self-worth. Everybody has a lot of shame and a lot of guilt for what's going on. And so they end up feeling, you know, pretty poorly about themselves. They end up feeling like, you know, they didn't do good enough. And they also end up feeling a tremendous amount of responsibility for what's going on in the family. Maybe I'm the one who caused it. Maybe I'm the one to blame. Maybe if I would have been a better kid. Maybe if I would have gotten better grades. Maybe if I would have been there for mom or dad, this wouldn't have happened. So one of the other characters...
Dave. There's a kind of a relationship between that factor and the one dealing with not carrying through. You know, I've seen a lot of fits and starts because if you have difficulty completing tasks, then you're going to develop that sort of self-perception of yourself as not doing enough because you haven't done enough to get your tasks done.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I kind of hadn't made that connection before. ACOAs, or adult children, have difficulty having fun. Adult children of alcoholics have difficulty being spontaneous because one of the ways they survived that experience was to try to exert a lot of control. They couldn't control what was happening in the family, so consequently they tried to exert that control in other parts of their life. And they learned that, you know, things had to be planned, and they have difficulty just letting loose and having fun spontaneously. Also, because a lot of times as children, they weren't allowed to be children. They maybe had to grow up at a young age, had to take on some responsibilities for younger children, perhaps, or just had to take on responsibilities in the family because the family wasn't functioning. Mom and dad weren't doing their part. So they had to become kind of pseudo-parents, or what's the other word for that? When they're older before their years, developmentally advanced, even though they're not emotionally there. And so consequently, they really didn't learn it. And one of the things that's a characteristic of being a child is what? Being able to play and to be spontaneous. As you watch children, they don't plan out what they're going to do. But being in an alcoholic home, because things were so unpredictable and so chaotic, one of the ways that they probably survived that was to exert some control. And so ACOAs will tell you often that they just have difficulty having fun. And is fun okay? You know, things maybe should be serious, is often a thought. Which is the next one, closely related, is that they take themselves very seriously. And oftentimes that has to do with the sense of responsibility they have for the family. Oftentimes, ACOAs grow up feeling like they have some responsibility for what has transpired in the family, and maybe they're to blame. And so they end up taking themselves pretty seriously. If you ever, I'll talk about kind of what you see in the workplace as a result of this. But you know, people who can't be teased, or if you kind of want to jokingly criticize them about a characteristic, they're super sensitive about it and think that if people say that to them, that they probably mean it. And they take themselves very, very seriously. Oftentimes, you want to tell ACOAs to lighten up, that because they don't know how to do that. Seventh one is that adult children of alcoholics have difficulty with intimate relationships. Not a big surprise, probably, right? They didn't get to experience a healthy kind of intimacy or see it demonstrated between mom and dad. And so entering into another relationship with somebody who's perhaps not healthy, which is often the case, makes it a real struggle, which is why she really called her second book Struggle for Intimacy. Because having had a lack of knowing what balanced love is, or cooperative relationship where people are on a reciprocal loving relationship, that wasn't the case for them. What they saw was usually probably one stronger parent taking care of another one. And that's what oftentimes they think that love is caretaking or rescuing or helping. And so ACOAs have difficulty with intimate relationships. The eighth one that she found was that adult children of alcoholics overreact to changes over which they have no control. ACOAs in the workplace sometimes have a really difficult time with change. And when changes are made, they're the ones who kind of, oh no, I can't handle that. And it's a big deal. And they have a kind of exaggerated response to that happening. They overreact to changes over which they haven't had a part in. Control becomes a big issue as they survive that experience. There was no control in the family. And so consequently in adulthood, what they carry is a tremendous desire to try to control events around them. Sometimes they will describe it as feeling like they were general manager of the universe. That's what they had to be. They had to control what happened over here and over here and over here. And then as a result, when change does take place and it's something that they didn't have a part in, or didn't maybe initiate or execute themselves, it becomes tremendously threatening. And that may come forth in a variety of ways. I'll talk about that in the workplace. The ninth one characteristic was that ACOAs constantly seek approval and affirmation. You might have heard me talk about this in another lecture where I talk about the fact that ACOAs sometimes can introduce themselves like, you know, hi, my name is Jackie, and how do you like me so far? Because they get real good at what we call impression management. I will try to control what your impression of me will be, because what you think of me matters more than maybe what I think of myself. There's been no good validation or healthy validation that children need growing up. If you can kind of think of the fact that we all, as children, have to go through some normal stages of growth and development. And what's happened growing up in an alcoholic family is that those things were crippled or somehow compromised. And so they didn't get some of those things. And life then as an adult is really with some deficits. There's some gaps. And one of those is really knowing one's identity. In fact, the most recent book related to ACOA is written by the name of Robert Subby. He's from Minnesota, and he calls it Lost in the Shuffle. I like that book a lot because it really talks about how the big compromise for a child growing up in that family is really kind of a loss of identity and not knowing really who they are and becoming really what other people around them want them to be. And so adult children of alcoholics constantly seek approval and affirmation. How am I doing so far? Did I do this right? Am I okay? And always wondering whether or not they did. The tenth one she found was that adult children of alcoholics usually feel that they are different from other people. I know that I'm kind of strange. I know that somebody else probably knows more about life than I do, and I know I'm just different from other people. And it must show. You must be able to tell. In fact, I probably have an A on my forehead from my experience. It's that obvious. And so they kind of often work very hard at trying to look normal, even though they don't feel that. And they feel some way that they're different from other people. The 11th one was adult children of alcoholics are super responsible or super irresponsible. Well, who does that leave out? But again, I think the issue is one of extremes. People who grew up in a dysfunctional family, particularly alcoholism, only know the extremes. They might have seen Dad say, okay, that's it, I'm calling it off forever, and the next thing we know, maybe is intoxicated. Or Mom saying, that's it, I've had enough, I'm moving out, I'm never coming back, I'm not going to have anything to do with that person again. And then the next thing we know is they're hunky-dory and, you know, they're two little lovebirds. And a lot of mixed messages get conveyed in that process, which usually are just the extremes of behavior. And so adult children usually are extremely responsible, or on the other end of the spectrum, super irresponsible. Some people, after they've learned about adult children of alcoholics, often will go to the extreme of even wondering whether or not they should check that out when they hire people. It's a good thing to, many people will say that they like hiring ACOAs because they'll do the work of two or three people because they're super responsible. A 12th one that she found was that adult children of alcoholics are extremely loyal, even in the face of evidence that the loyalty is undeserved. And in the work situation, sometimes you'll see that maybe there's really a bad administration or there's a really chaotic kind of organization go on, and yet there's a certain group of people who are just willing and true and loyal and will at any price stick with it and hang it out and be true to the, quote, kind of to the family, so to speak. And they kind of feel, and again, this is sort of that not knowing exactly what is normal, they feel like they have to just stick with it. They have to hang in there. And they might have seen that in some way demonstrated in the family that they grew up in. Loyalty at any price. Even though nobody feels good about the family, you don't dare criticize it, right? Don't call my dad an alcoholic. I mean, I know he is, but I don't want to hear you say it. And so they'll be extremely loyal, even to the point where the loyalty is very undeserved. The last one is that adult children of alcoholics are impulsive. They tend to lock themselves into a course of action without giving serious consideration to alternative behaviors or possible consequences. This impulsivity leads to confusion, self-loathing, and loss of control over their environment. And in addition, they spend an excessive amount of energy cleaning up the mess. So, oftentimes, it's kind of like tunnel vision. They can only see maybe one way of doing things. And then somebody else will introduce them to another possibility, and it's sort of like, oh my gosh, I never thought about that. They kind of get locked into one particular course of action, and they have trouble with gray areas. Things are either black and white, right or wrong, and there's no room for ambiguity. And that's again related to the issue of control and the chaos and the unpredictability that was there. I guess before I talk about the workplace, I just want to open it up for some response to those characteristics. If anybody has any questions or comments about
that. It's like beating around the bush all the time. You just keep going in the circle.
How's that?
Well, your father should say, I say your father was a drunkard, and you don't want anybody else to know you beat around the bush saying, well, he is, or something like that. And he's sick. You never come to the point.
Yeah. Avoidance of it. Denial. Yeah. Definitely. You learn how to deny and protect real well. Don't talk about it. A no-talk rule. Uh-huh.
I like that analogy. It's like the elephants in the living room. And you, everyone knows it's there, but no one talks about it, and they just walk around.
Mm-hmm. Might even clean up after it, right?
Yeah. But
any other comments? I want to talk just a little bit about what it looks like then in the workplace. As a result of growing up in an alcoholic family, the functioning in the workplace can be pretty challenging. And you may recognize some of these behaviors in people you have had the opportunity to work with or be involved in a task with. Oftentimes you'll see perfectionism. At any price, things have to be exactly done perfectly. again related to the sense of control. They might have difficulty listening, particularly when they have a need to be in charge. My guess is in an alcoholic family there wasn't a lot of demonstrations of good listening going on, and most of the expression of any emotions were drug affected, of course. And so normal expression of anger and fear or hurt or pain or guilt, any of those kinds of things, often were done either under the influence or at a time when somebody was mad at the person who was under the influence. And so listening was not a skill that was particularly learned very well. In their teamwork, they may have an inability to follow directions, a tendency to go off on their own with a great desire of autonomy. Or they might follow directions rigidly, just right to the letter, and feeling like they're really locked in to just doing it exactly a certain way, and there's no room for imperfection, no room to make any mistakes. They have difficulty delegating, and this is kind of related to the issue of being in control and the notion that maybe it's a good idea to hire ACOAs just because they'll do the work of two and three people. They usually have trouble delegating because in an alcoholic family, you can't really rely on anybody else to do something that you ask them to do. And so delegating becomes a pretty threatening thing to do. How dare I maybe let go of something because I never saw anybody follow through on what I asked for in my family. Why can I trust anybody now outside of that in adulthood? Now, on the other hand, they might also have difficulty making decisions except in crisis situations. ACOAs, as I said, it's be compared in some ways to a post-traumatic stress syndrome or post-Vietnam-like experience. They can rise to the occasion when there's chaos and a crisis going on because that's familiar. That's the way things were in the family. And so you'll see kind of maybe their strength come out when those situations happen. And maybe they get, you know, almost stronger and able to take charge when those kind of situations arise. They might have difficulty initiating projects, going ahead and getting started on their own. Maybe have difficulty setting limits, kind of an eschewed sense of boundaries. I kind of alluded to that earlier, not having boundaries in relationships, not knowing where I end and where another person starts, or where I kind of set the limits about somebody invading me as a person in my and my space and who I am, and maybe letting people kind of trounce on me, where other people who had a healthy sense of who they were and a strength around themselves would not have put up with that behavior. So their boundaries, they have difficulty setting limits. Often don't see options, as I said before, no gray or middle ground. Sense of perceptions are very normal. Again, this is related to control. Either they have a strong need to be in control, or there's no willingness to take any control. The empathic skills, the ability to have empathy or to be listening, often are very limited, and they're usually pretty rigid, or there's no room for flexibility. They can't really listen in a kind of a relaxed kind of way, or they might be too empathic. Oftentimes the older children were the ones who had to sit around and listen to mom or dad kind of complain or talk about the situation. And as a result, they became very good at tuning in to what was happening to other people. Oftentimes ACOA, as a result of that, get really good at talking to other people about their problems and not focusing on themselves. The notion of codependency. The problem with that in the workplace is that then sometimes decisions don't get made by somebody who maybe needs to be in charge. As a supervisor, ACOAs sometimes end up showing themselves in a way that they may maybe have difficulty tolerating imperfections. Their rigidity and their narrow perceptions make them really good trainers. You know, they're good at teaching, I think they often do well in situations where they're in charge and able to tell exactly this is how you do it kind of thing. But however, they lack some of those empathic skills, and they have great difficulty kind of in the application and the practice of what they're trying to teach. So they have difficulty tolerating imperfections, and it's easier to just teach somebody else how to do it perfectly than to have to demonstrate that. And so they often maybe are good trainers. They have difficulty seeing the act of negotiating. Growing up in an alcoholic family, there was very little negotiation around things, right? You can guess that things were just done either my way or not at all, and you didn't see mom and dad sort of work something out or have compromise. So they're usually not very good at negotiating. This is the way it has to be, kind of. They may have difficulty giving criticism, and that may be related to their need for approval. They may have difficulty giving people feedback that might be negative or perceived that way, because then they may not, you may not like me. And then if you don't like me, I may not be in control. And so they often have difficulty with that. That's as a supervisor. As an employee, an ACOA has difficulty accepting criticism. They're the kind of people that you feel kind of like you kind of walk around on eggshells. You're afraid to say anything, for you might hurt their feelings because you don't think they could handle it. They usually take criticism personally as a statement about themselves, and that if you criticize me, that means you reject me totally. If you say anything about one part of me, that must mean you must not like me at all. And that's, again, the black and white kind of mentality that comes from a rigid, chaotic family. And they might become inappropriately angry in a situation or overly hurt, which may escalate into rage or a powerlessness kind of stance, moving them into kind of almost in a state of being immobilized. You know, I can't almost even handle it. So some of you are nodding your head. And then they might take this as a great defeat and they might say, well, then I'll just quit or I won't try, and thus become depressed. They might also, as an employee, become quite intolerant of imperfections in their supervisors, criticizing maybe the supervisors a great deal and finding everything wrong with them, and difficulty taking or following directions. The crisis handlers, I want to say just a little bit about the notion I mentioned earlier about being able to kind of rise to the occasion when things are really in a crisis. Again, most likely comes from handling the experiences they did, you know, in their family. Although they might not be technically qualified, they're able to take action when a crisis presents itself, and may, and sometimes almost spoof people because they look like they can really take charge. That's a real familiar situation to them. And are often, more often, given a great deal of responsibility, and as a result have a lot of fear of failure that goes along with that, related to that I don't know what normal is, and also a fear of success at the same time. Like, I don't know if I could handle the success, and yet here I am with all this responsibility. ACOAs might often present themselves at work with some of the following problems. Workaholism, not being able to stop. They might be compulsive about getting a task done and just kind of, like I said, not know the boundaries and just continue to work. They might also demonstrate problems on the job related to eating behaviors. They might have eating disorders such as compulsive overeating, bulimia or anorexia. They might also have alcoholism. ACOAs also marry into alcoholic relationships at a very high rate. They might have parenting problems, for example, a chemically dependent child themselves, even though they may not be chemically dependent. Battering and incest happens in alcoholic families more so than others. They might have a lot of sickness, frequently gone from work because of that. Depression is a very common experience for adult children of alcoholics, especially if they're not chemically dependent. It's almost like they exhibit their chemical dependency by getting depressed versus imbibing in a chemical of some kind. Those are just some things related to being seen in the workplace. What I'd like to do is also leave an ACOA kind of a little questionnaire that people can take to see how severely you might have been affected if you did grow up in an alcoholic family. And kind of it's just a guideline for people to see if that experience has affected you in any kind of way. And I'll leave a copy of that on reserve in the library, and you're welcome to go ahead and take that if you'd like. Want to just open it up for questions or comments? Or personal experience, or?
Is there any statistics as far as in the workplace on people, longevity at work, staying on one job or moving on to the other? You know, you mentioned that difficulty with supervisors, that could be an issue, or, you know, that need for success. I'm not making it here, so let me move to another place and try it there and see.
My guess is, I haven't read anything, so I can't say if there's been any kind of study done on that, but my guess would be that you'd see the two extremes, being loyal and staying on and being committed to try to fix an organization, especially if they came out of the family experience feeling responsible and like they should rescue with a family, and maybe staying on a job, trying to make it work for a long period of time. Or the other extreme, you know, not hanging around and cutting out before they've really tried to negotiate. Again, not being able to live in the gray area or feeling like, you know, maybe I should try these things, and if I try them and they don't work, I'll just move on and feel good about that. Often they usually leave with one of the other experiences. That's what my guess would be. Did you have a reason for asking or just curious? Okay. Yeah. Any other comments?
These children of the alcoholics tend to be more suicidal than they're normal, or do they just talk about it sometimes, but really don't fall through like these things that I've just going on today?
Yeah. I know that the rates of suicide are higher than in the general population in adult children or in children of alcoholics. I think in another class that I've given, I talk about four different roles that are often seen in an alcoholic family. One called the family hero, one called the scapegoat, one called the lost child, and one called the mascot. The person we call, or kind of talk about the way that they survive that experience called the lost child, is the one who more or less withdraws from the family, is the person who's off sort of spending a lot of time by themselves, being quietly busy, reading books. They're the ones who's up in the room with their headset on. They become pretty imaginative, have quite a fantasy life, and they're the ones that, to survive in this family and to get by, I learned not to make too many close connections. And so they withdraw from the family, more of a loner type of person, have difficulty making decisions, don't often have a lot of friends, often have problems with eating, and they often don't have death at an earlier age and are the ones who are highest rate for suicide, that particular kind of way of surviving. But I don't know exactly what the statistic would be and what would be the suicide attempt rate versus actual success or being able or following through on that. I don't know if somebody else might. But I'm glad you brought that up. That's also another issue for ACOAs too.
I think one of the things that makes in a workplace, but it's not only in a workplace, difficult dealing with adult children and alcoholics is that because of the lack of communication and the lack of the negotiating skills and all of that, a person really doesn't have much option but kind of to project their own inner thought processes onto everyone else. There is no more, you know, if you can't negotiate and if you can't communicate, what else can you do? But imagine that other people are sort of experiencing the same sort of inner psychic developments and such that you are. So, you know, that there's, you know, there's, I think a lot of times people will blow up and everyone around them will think, well, what, you know, what did we do? And it, a lot of it's because the person is thinking and thinking and thinking and, and imagining all kinds of things going on in the heads of people around them that may not even be close to reality.
Well, again, because there's such a no-talk rule in the family that they grew up in, that's, yeah, that's really, it makes a lot of sense. There wasn't feedback given about what the reality was. And so there's kind of a guessing all the time, and certainly a storing up of emotions. I often think that in some ways, codependents or the family members who have, you know, the family illness have a far harder road to toe in some ways, in that they were experiencing all this without alcohol. You know, the alcoholic at least had, you know, some anesthetizing going on, and, you know, the family didn't. And so in many ways, the stored up emotions, you know, have to pay their price somehow. And I think that's a lot of what happens, kind of guessing at what other people around me are thinking or doing. Or, and sometimes the idea that they might even be able to ask is beyond, you know, could I ask somebody what they're feeling or thinking, or could I tell them? Is like a notion that's foreign to them.
And the direct communication.
Yeah.
Particular emotion. I wonder about the way you mentioned criticism. I had this turn into just absolute paralysis almost. Just unable to answer or to respond at all. That typical amount. But the, when I have to say something, so like I need person, you know, say my, I need to say, I need you to go home right now. I can't, you know, try to explain why. At that point, you're tied up in knots, and you feel like you can't say, well, I need you to leave now. I have to, you know, and a careful explanation, and then, well, why don't you just say that, you know, you can't live with me, or why don't you say this instead? Why don't you just throw me out or stick the knife in me right now? Or it's unreal, but is that, you know, is that where it comes from? It's what I've never thought about it.
So what you're talking about is being able to give people direct statements and worrying about their criticism of you based on what you saw maybe an alcoholic's response in the past to be.
I hadn't thought of that as an influence, but just
It didn't necessarily have to be alcoholism, but almost the sense that, you know, I don't really count. I mean, I don't. What I really need and want is secondary to maybe you liking me. I'm tired and I want to go to bed, but I'm not going to say that directly to you because, oh, you might not like me then, or you might perceive it as criticism.
Anything to avoid the criticism.
Yeah, right.
Including standing for half an hour with the door open and freezing when the wind is coming.
The way Minnesota people do, right?
You don't get the door open, we're standing with the, you know, heating the outdoors, but anything to say that, you know, I'm tired, I really have to get up at 5 or I have to do something tomorrow. and having to be so careful.
Yeah.
Finally, the patience to me is just finally just gone, and then I, you know, I feel shame, but exactly. I can't help it. I just, mm-hmm. don't just leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
What can you say?
Yeah, Barb?
I can relate, so maybe you already talked about this. What do you usually recommend as far as dealing with all this then? Do most, is simply a recognition of the situation adequate for most adult children alcoholics, or what kind of therapy, how do you work with adult children alcoholics then to help change some of these behaviors?
Well, no, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I didn't talk much about recovery or the, you know, the changing part. There's a whole range from people just getting involved in some self-help, in the sense that there is now a 12-step program similar to AA and Al-Anon called ACOA meetings, or COA. I'm not sure. It depends on in your area what they're called, and that's a totally non-professional self-help group. That's, you know, there's no professionals there. It's not paid therapy or anything like that. It's just a support group. That's one option. And that's, you know, people coming together who have also had that experience and learning how to make changes in their life so that they don't continue that pattern. To formally getting involved in some treatment that might be in the form of maybe individual counseling with somebody who understands alcoholism or understands that kind of particular family experience. But I guess for myself, what I've seen professionally be one of the more effective ways is in a group therapy with other therapists who work with probably anywhere from 8 to 10 or 12 adult children of alcoholics, and then there's two therapists, a male and a female, and they begin to, I think the initial phase is really just unlocking the emotions, being able to even begin to express themselves. And in many ways, you begin to kind of create that family experience in the group. And I'd say that's maybe anywhere from a 3 to 6 month process. And I think group therapy is a more effective way in some ways of dealing with that. And then I think reading is certainly valuable, but a lot of times, ACOAs kind of become book junkies in the sense that they try to figure out everything that happened by reading it rather than just getting out there and experiencing what they need to do. But I think certainly becoming more informed is, you know, the awareness is good. I mentioned a workbook, Barb, that's kind of good for people to use if treatment or therapy is not available to them. And I think it also realizing that, you know, the process of change is one where you move a little bit forward and maybe a little bit back, and then the next time a little bit more forward, and just recognizing what particular behaviors for you are ones that got, you know, that get you stuck. I don't know, is there somebody else maybe in the group who's had some experience with treatment?
Yeah, I've gone to the ACO meetings in Seattle, and for me, it was something I had faced into for a number of years, really, to shut up the emotions and need to control all these issues that can really relate to. But I think for a lot of people, for them, they need the meetings. They need to go. This is their I don't know.
Lifeline.
Yeah, and they really stress that you need to go every week. Well, for me personally, it was, you know, time for recognizing a lot of things and working through them, but I don't know that necessarily I would want to. I didn't feel comfortable in the way that these people were very feeling that this was a very important part to continue with for a long period of time. Some of them, I think, for a lifetime, but mm-hmm. very helpful for me, even, you know, just the sharing with other people that you find out that you are normal, or that in normal in the sense that you're not the only person that's experienced these things, and so that was
mm-hmm. I think the group experience is valuable in the sense that it's for the first time if they're able to talk about it and not feel the shame and not feel the rule or the message in the family, which is shut up, keep things inside the family. And that's really freeing. But as a result of that, a lot of times at the meetings, because it's such a new thing, there's a lot of emotional discharge that goes on. And sometimes I've sent people to meetings and they've gotten really turned off because there's just like this kind of almost catharsis of feelings that have been locked up for so long. And the recovery is all still very new for a lot of people. And so sometimes people are more comfortable just going to regular Al-Anon meetings where there's a little more longer-term recovery than what you see at identified ACOA meetings. I don't know. It's past five, so thank you for your attention.